I am super excited to be sitting here with Brent Pollington. Brent, why don't you take a minute and introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Brad. We obviously connected on LinkedIn, which is an exceptional platform to help business people connect. Both share a ton of content there. So I own a staffing and recruitment company. I've been in talent acquisition for about 15 years, just under 10 years with my own firm. We exclusively are based here in Vancouver and recruit here in Vancouver. And part of the reason we connected, we both have podcasts or webcasts and share content. Ultimately, it seems like our goals are aligned. So my program is called HR Doctors, and I founded it because we work on behalf of our clients to help them solve complex recruiting challenges, whether it's high volume recruiting needs or whether it's strategic search. And a lot of what I do is consult with the businesses I work with and help them unlock the things, the blind spots, the pitfalls, the landmines. And a recent survey and study came out about how in Q1 and 2, I think it was more than 50% of employers plan to hire, but the number one greatest challenge that they're currently faced with is the skill gap, and saying that they're having a hard time hiring people. And so for the most part in Vancouver, we're seeing a demand, we're seeing an influx of requisitions. We've got a lot of jobs we're actively working on here in our office, and Q1 and Q2 seem to be off to a great start. But the common denominator with our clients is they say it's super hard to hire, but you can get 100 applicants for a job overnight. And so at the same time, we have a ton of job seekers that reach out to us and apply to our positions and look for guidance and support from us. And one of our greatest challenges as a staffing and recruitment firm is we don't have the time to help everybody as much as we'd love to. And we do try to help where we can, but there is, you know, a ton of job seekers out there. There's been a ton of layoffs. It's so hard. And I wager it's 10 times harder for job seekers than it is for businesses, especially if you're unemployed. And it like blows my mind that these two scenarios exist at the same time, where businesses are struggling to hire people and job seekers are saying that it's impossible or hard to find work. Like, how do those two exist at the same time? And so that's where HR Doctors came from, which is actually our core values. But it was built on the premise of trying to connect with anybody like yourself who is speaking to the audience, where it's businesses, to try to help them unlock better hiring practices, whether it's job seekers to help give them clarity, guidance, or motivation or support or empathy in their job search. And just on any facet of that spectrum to try to bridge that gap that seems to exist when you would think those two things would mend themselves. And it seems like, if anything, they're creating a greater divide.
Yeah, it's I've said it before. It's like when you're scrolling through Kijiji or Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace or whatever it is you're using, and you see like somebody saying for sale, one ladder, and then you see the ad right below it, wanted, one ladder. And it's like, why aren't you two people talking?
Hey, is this ladder available? And then no answer.
Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting little bit of a different dynamic today, because you have a podcast, as well and, whatnot. So, bit of a different take today, where, we're going to just challenge each other and ask each other a bunch of questions and have some good conversations around, around some of our philosophies and all that stuff. So one of the things that I've heard you talk about is, you know, how you bridge between sort of businesses and employees, and you know, some talk around that philosophy and your process and whatnot. So can you dive into that a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think on the business side, so, you know, for anybody that maybe has a misconception or hasn't worked with a staffing or recruiting firm, like, we ultimately get paid by the businesses that engage us to help them. And we get engaged in a couple different ways. One is through, they say, hey, I need help hiring somebody, and we go and do that. And the other is like outside of those engagements, where they say, hey, like, we need help hiring. Maybe it's through you directly, maybe it's indirect. And so I actually spend a lot of time with businesses working on what I call the three pillars of hiring and retention, which is what you do on the front end before you even start your recruitment process. So, you know, I think it's exceptionally difficult for a business that doesn't have a clearly refined vision and mission statement to go and create those things. I mean, those things exist within the company, whether they are detailed on paper or not. But those things have become even more prevalent these days, especially post-pandemic, with job seekers being more informed and ultimately looking for organizations that they align really well with. And in the fight for top talent, if you don't have a clearly articulated vision and mission and path that you're looking to go down, it's hard to really create that alignment with individuals or with job seekers and then further create that retention strategy. I think further, it's also about like helping businesses understand what they're recruiting against. So met with a client yesterday that's a landscape company. Almost every landscape company in Vancouver in February, March is going to ramp up and try to hire all the landscapers in the market. And yeah. So, you know, one of the things we're going to do in the next couple of weeks is hop on the different job boards here in Vancouver to try to get a semblance of how many companies. And for them, they're in North Vancouver, which is this tight little market. It's landlocked. You're really limited to who you can hire. And so the goal is to look and see how many companies that you're truly competing against and how you're competing against them, how good your job post is going to look. If, you know, I get so many times, I get organizations that come to me and say that they are in the fight for the best people. They're paying well above market rates. And then we'll go on the job boards and do a quick analysis to see what their competition's paying. And they're middle of the pack. But in their eyes, they're paying top tier rates because it's the most operationally they can afford to pay, or at least that's where they've anchored themselves. And so there can sometimes be this real disconnect or anchoring that they create for themselves. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to pay the top rate. It's more like, you know, if you're not able to pay the top salary, if you're not able to compete at, you know, the professional, you know, leagues, then you have to understand like where you can compete. And maybe that's in flexibility. Maybe it's in a, you know, a growth mode. Maybe it's you're going to be a launch pad and you hire people who don't have skills and experience, whatever it may be. So there's a lot of work we spend on the front end. Further, we get into the actual recruitment process. So not every company wants to or can afford to engage an agency. And so we'll work with them to try to help them understand like what we do. We try to give our playbook away and say, this is the process that our teams run, and it's exceptionally difficult to do, and it's a process we've innovated through constantly. And then the last is just what you do once you've hired somebody, pre-boarding and imprinting and setting new employees up for success. And again, I think, you know, a lot of those things are things that organizations can do. And my goal when connecting with businesses is trying to find the little bites that they can take off that are easy to action, easy to change, high impact, versus saying, you now have 6 months of homework. You have to read 3 books. You've got to get everyone in your organization together and go through this massive change management project. Like, I'm not the person for that, but I can try to highlight 1 or 2 or 3 things, whether it's, you know, you've got 17 Google reviews, because it's just not a way that you've got business in the past and you've got a 3.7 star rating, you know, go change that. Or you've got, you know, 1 star on 1 review on Indeed or wherever it may be, and just looking for little like impact places. Or maybe, you know, your job post is just a job description saying we're a great company, come work for us, versus really trying to speak to the job seeker. And maybe you don't have a formalized process on how you onboard and set new employees up. And then on the job seeker side, through the platform, it's really just trying to find experts that either advocate or speak on their behalf, or trying to give transparency of like what the business is going through, to try to help them understand like why businesses make it hard, and why there are hoops to jump through, and like why those exist and why you should be prepared for them and consider jumping through them or not.
Yeah. You mentioned something about, you know, sort of that starting point or a launch pad. You know, reminded me of a story I heard. I think it was actually maybe even Canadian Tire or an organization, something like that. So for all of our listeners in the US and overseas, Google Canadian Tire, it's a landmark in Canada. It's a store we all love, but also love to crap on. So it was basically the situation where their turnover was just incredibly high. And they tried to understand it. And, instead of trying to actually fix it, what they realized was that people were using it as a starting point for their career. So they were coming in and they were learning and then they were moving on. And so they actually leaned into that as a recruitment strategy and said, you know, this is a great launch point for your career, for, you know, warehousing or whatever it was. And so they actually increased their turnover, which sounds counterproductive, but they had a lot much easier time hiring in the back end, because it gave them a good story to tell, right? And so sometimes what we see as a problem can actually be leveraged as a way. So you're right. You don't have to be the top paying company. You know, there's lots of other things that you can do that might sort of help solve that. So
And it's a great like story for both the employee and the employer, in the sense that, you know, obviously there are people at Canadian Tire that have been there for a long time. They've got corporate roles within each franchise location. They've got their little business center where they've got their head office within their office. And there are opportunities for growth for the right people. But for the most part, a lot of their workers are, you know, frontline entry-level roles, customer service positions. And, you know, if you are portraying yourself as like, you know, we're going to pay you whatever the reasonable rate is. I'm assuming most of them are probably paying above minimum wage, but probably very close to it, just to compete in their market. But if they are clearly advocating to the typical job seeker coming in that we get, you're not going to be here forever, and we're not going to try to paint some picture that this is what it's going to be. But if you're going to come here, and we're going to give you a framework, and we're going to instill behaviors and give you tools, well, that's part of the value equation, and it's why we're not going to pay you, you know, $3 or $4 or $5 an hour more. It's because, like, we both know that you're coming in without skills, without experience, and our mutual goal is to give you those, maximize them while you're here, and help both of us leverage that into happy customers and you into whatever your next step is. And I think that's such an important piece for, like, any organization is, you know, if you're looking for employees that'll be lifers with you, that's great. But, like, if you understand that not every employee will, or even the majority of them won't be, like, what's important to them, what's important to you, and how do you both maximize that relationship, and what do you ultimately want out of that employee relationship, and what do they want out of you? And if you don't have that clarity alignment, and as I talked about that vision and mission piece, like, if you don't have that articulated, then you don't know what you're fighting towards. And again, it's exceptionally challenging to put together, but by them realizing that, and them leaning into it, like you said, I think it unlocks, like, so much potential for both sides, to make it clear when someone comes in, they go, I know what I'm here for. It's to learn and to use it as a stepping stone. And that, you know, I want to leave on good terms. I want to show up as a great employee. I want to be able to use my manager as a reference. And I also shouldn't feel like afraid to go to my boss and say, hey, I've been here for a year. I'm now looking for my change. Like, can you support me in that? Let me, like, exit in a really, like, positive way. And can you help me with references while I'm still currently employed here? Because that'll be the most impactful reference you'll ever have, is from your current boss.
Yep.
Right? Like.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah, absolutely. So and when we talk about sort of that the cost of recruitment, you know, a lot of people really view recruitment as a cost center. Mm-hmm. It's overhead. But in reality, I think recruitment is a profit generator. I mean, obviously, without people, you have no business, you have no profit. But you know, what's your thoughts on sort of flipping that script from 100% cost center to a function of the business that actually drives growth and drives revenue?
It's crazy that you bring this up. I literally was reading a Harvard Business Review article. It's on my screen right now, about how financial accounting screws HR up, and how, you know, if we go to the, you know, the rich dad, poor dad mindset, that assets are things that make you money and liabilities are things that cost you money. There's, you know, very few positions in an organization where direct revenue generation is tied to their role. And that would be sales for the most part. You know, everything after that, even if they are all revenue generating positions, they aren't viewed in that way. And the math is, it's broken. And I would wager, especially, you know, in recruitment that we're in, that every position is a for-profit position. there's not a single position that I've ever recruited for on behalf of a client where they go, this is what our budget is for this role. And our intent is to lose money on this person, whether it's a customer service role, whether it's reception admin. It doesn't matter what the position is. In my opinion, they're all to help the company be more efficient, deliver better product and result and service to customers, and generate money from it. But in this review, the titles and the sections are literally employees aren't treated as assets. Pensions are treated as liabilities and are sometimes the biggest liabilities that a company have. Benefits are seen as liabilities. Gap rules fueling the shifts to non-employees. It goes on. And again, I think it is because the math is broken and it's on both sides. I think the traditional employee doesn't understand that a $55,000 a year employee has a $100,000 plus hard cost to the organization when it comes to CPP, like Canadian Pension Plan, employment insurance, work safe, all these different factors, their benefits, everything goes into this equation. And so, you know, someone who's a $20 an hour employee has a rough cost to the organization of, you know, probably $70,000 a year to the organization. And it's an entry level position. And they go like, why is it so hard? It should be easy to get a job. But the thing is, some of these organizations, like if they screw it up and they get it wrong, or you're not a right fit for the organization, it can cost them. I mean, for some organizations, it could be like a nail in the coffin that puts them out of business. Like I'm sure you've seen some horror stories of companies that have made bad hires, and it can be massively impactful. And so like, I don't know how to fix the math. But I feel like the math is broken where like I you touched on something really interesting. You said that you believe like, you know, employees are assets. Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, I remember back, I used to recruit for a retail sales organization. We sold cell phones. That's what we did. And audio video, cell phones and audio video. And we were a premier boutique. Like we weren't the Costco or the Walmart of the city. You know, we were the spot where you went to get custom installations and things like that. And back, you know, even at that time, my boss, who was the CEO of the company, as a recruiter, my bonus was based on revenue per employee. So we calculated revenue per employee, and we knew that every hire should drive that number up. And if it's not driving that number up, then I'm not doing a good job in hiring the right people. Because every person that you hire in your business, I used to do a lot of sales training and business training and stuff back in the day, and we talked about you know, how the purpose of a business is to create and keep customers. So your role in the business is either creating the customer or impacting, keeping the customer. And so everyone sees sales as sort of the revenue generation of the business, but it's a lot more expensive to get a customer than it is to keep a customer. So 100%. All of that other functions of the business, the accounting, the, you know, accounts payable, obviously we need people to pay their bills and we need bills to be paid so that we don't go out of business. And, but all of those other functions really impact keeping customers. And so, you know, you're going to make more money ultimately off of customers you already have versus customers you're acquiring today. And so, you know, I think a lot of the really top CEOs of the world know that number or talk about that number or calculate sure. that number is what is my revenue per employee. And every time I hire, I should be hiring in a way that drives that revenue per employee up. If it's going down, then I'm hiring the wrong roles, or I'm not hiring people who are effective in their job, or whatever the situation might be. But, every hire that I make, every person that comes into the business is an asset in driving the profit of that organization.
Well, and that's like, to me, it's such a linchpin piece that is missing on the job seeker side, where, you know, every position is an asset to the organization. Your job is to create revenue and income for the business, or retain revenue and income for the business. And I think it's probably the biggest piece that's missed. I mean, I saw a great post from a friend of mine yesterday, Clark Glassford, where he said the number one thing that employers are looking for when hiring somebody is an informed job seeker. And I thought it was so impactful. And we see, like, people post stuff about resumes all the time, about sharing your data and metrics and accountabilities and what your impact was to the organization. And there are so many people who don't have those things, either A, because they didn't know that their, or understood that their role, regardless of the position, is an impact position for the organization that is tied to the direct success of the organization. And being able to articulate, no matter how far removed you are from that front line, from the actual, like, you know, sale being rang through the till, so to speak, that by not, like, knowing that, by not being informed, by you not seeing your position as one that is an asset to the organization, that is directly tied to revenue, whether you're in accounting or in operations, or it doesn't matter, they're all tied in. And so if you don't have that knowledge and understanding, then you're not going to portray it to an organization as you're applying. And then further, they're going to have a hard time trying to understand how, when you come in. And I think this is, like, truly the linchpin piece, in my opinion, is that, again, every organization that's looking to hire somebody, especially, well, and I maybe caveat this by saying if it's, you know, a government or a nonprofit, but every organization is looking to profit. The goal of the organization is to hire you, pay you for your labor, and profit from it. And generally, they have to profit 50% to even, you know, looking at a 200% like increase, where if you cost me $100,000, I need to make $300,000 off your work so that the organization can cover their operating costs and that there's actually profit left over. And people want fairness. They want equality. They want, you know, different perks and benefits. And again, they don't understand that. I think for the most part, employers want to afford these things and give these things to employees, and they want people to have the opportunity to get, you know, support for mental health and well-being and, you know, vacation time and benefits and all these things, but they all have a direct cost. And if the organization isn't profitable, your job doesn't exist and everybody loses. And there's a lot of, like, you know, fairness. And it's like, well, it's not fair. Like, it's not supposed to be fair and equitable. The organization can't break even. If they do, they're losing. They have to win. They have to grow. They have to be profitable. And if they're not, your job doesn't exist, or this position's not the right position for the organization, and you don't fit in that, or in that position regardless.
I think that's a huge misunderstanding in the world, is that every business should be focused on driving profit. And we're kind of getting a little bit away from recruitment here, but still, like, even not for profits, like, for example, you know, I'm the president of a local chapter of a not-for-profit this year, and our goal is to make money. Like, the only difference between us, like, that not-for-profit that I'm running versus the Candidate Hub, my for-profit business that I'm running, is my goal with the not-for-profit is to give away all the profit we make, right, so that we do break even at the end of the year, right? So, but it's not to balance cost and revenue to zero. It's to have a higher revenue than cost, so we have this profit that we can give to people that need it. So every company is geared towards, or should be focused on, that revenue per, you know, per person that the people are bringing in, and that profit, and how that sort of all plays together to pull it in, which I think you guys do a really good job. If you want to expand on it a little bit, just sort of how you pull all of that information together for some of your customers, because I know you guys dig deep into sort of the markets, and you kind of hit on it a little bit with sort of, you know, the landscaping company and you know, what they're going to be coming up against, and How does that all play into your process of how you're helping companies to find better talent and align themselves in that marketplace?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think there's a handful of different ways to hire people. Referrals, I think we would maybe all say is the least expensive way you can hire a really great person. Next after that is recruiting on your own. If you can post the job and go on a job board and spend, free posts or a couple $100 and then you manage the process internally, the next would be using like an agency partner that maybe posts on your behalf. And then later on you get into specialized and strategic searches. And if we're headhunting somebody, we're looking at somebody who is a current impact player in another organization and trying to create an incentivization for them to come and join your organization. You need to really understand like what it is you're offering and what it is you're trying to accomplish. And I think it ties so well. I haven't used this in my approach, but exactly to what you said about how we really need to look at these hires, not as liabilities, but assets. And that, what is the cost of not hiring the A player? We had a client we were working with the other day who wanted to hire a like rock star for their organization. And we found one super early in the search, which was not what my expectation was going to be. And this individual interviewed with them. He was currently making, I think it was $140,000 or $150,000 a year. And in order for them to convince him to make a change when he wasn't looking for one, it was probably going to cost him $20,000 or $30,000 on top of his current salary to do it. And they said, like, that's too much. It's going to be too expensive for us. Like, it's well above the market rate. The question to me was like, it's so tough because we go the fear of loss and what if it doesn't work out? But it's also hard. It's almost like as entrepreneurs, we have to like put the chips on the table and spin the wheel and go like, well, what if it does work out? Like, what if this rock star comes in and transforms your organization and really results in like a massive impact? And I think this ties so well into something of yours that I will continue to highlight and share that I got it from you. But it's about like how recruitment's like building a championship sports team. You had the most amazing like analogy when we spoke. And I think this really ties in. And we'll maybe touch on it in how that ties into what we do to try to unlock the understanding and visibility for clients. But maybe before I go deeper into that, do you mind highlighting your kind of view on that approach?
Yeah. There's so many ways that it overlaps and I use it obviously to pitch Candidate Hub, but sort of my view on that is really there's three ways to build a championship team. And the first way is through free agency, which is trying to get those A players, that everybody wants. And so, if a Connor Bedard, a Connor McDavid, a Patrick Mahomes or a LeBron James kind of player.
Shohei Ohtani recently, right?
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani, like $70 million, right? To go play for LA. He ended up signing in LA, I think. These guys, they're the 5% of the market that everybody wants, right? And when you're posting on the job boards, you're not going to find that part of the market. They're not there. They're like, you know what I mean? They're just that. But I mean, that's kind of what you're competing against. You're competing against. So in free agency, I have the choice to sign wherever I want. Everybody wants me. I can sign wherever I want. And so
but he had no fear of loss. Like it wasn't like there was no one was going to hire him. So he had zero fear and he was able to, I don't know how many, but the best thing is he publicized all the different organizations he was going and interviewing with. And he wasn't interviewing with them to say like, I'm really interested in joining your organization. And like, what can I do to convince you to hire me? It was like, I'm an impact player. Whoever I sign with is going to get somebody amazing. What are you going to do to convince me that this is the right home for me to come? And we don't know what those conversation was, but maybe it was, we'll just pay you money. maybe it was, we're going to pay you money, but also we're going to commit to building a championship team around you. And we're going to leverage the farm to try to make the win happen in the next 2 years or 3 years. And you're going to be able to say you were the anchor piece that started that build for us. Or who knows what like the piece was, but the organization had to come to him and convince him they were the right home. And he got to pick at the end. He probably had, he had multiple offers, right?
Multiple offers, right? And it's the same thing with trade. So you can either do it through free agency or you can do it through trade. And in order to trade for a player, you have to give up assets, right? Like, if I was going to trade for a player like that, I'd have to give up a prospect, some high draft picks. I'd have to give up quite a bit to get him. I might get him at a little bit of a cheaper salary because he's already locked into a contract, etc. But in recruiting, you know, those sort of two go hand in hand with sourcing and attracting talent. In that I'm either trying to get them from a job board or I'm trying to get them from an agency. And they both cost money. And I'm not saying it's not money worth spending, because if you can get Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, any one of those guys, if you can get them on your team, then do it, right? But to your point, it's going to cost you money, because I need to sell our organization on why, and I need to step up and pay this contract that this person is going to deserve or, you know, currently needs or whatever. So your analogy about, or your story about how, this person was going to cost them X amount of dollars more, but he was a superstar and a player, you know, he was Connor Bedard, right? Yeah. And so they say they can't afford it. Well, you know, what's Connor Bedard's point production per game going to be? Right. So what's the impact he's going to have on the organization? And other players are going to want to come to your team because you have Connor Bedard. And so, you know, your overall improvement in process is going to, like, your team's going to get better. But it's going to cost you money to do that. And the other way is, you know, through draft and player development. And that's one that not a lot of people talk about. Not, you know, only the true fans sort of know, other than if there is a rock star coming through the draft that, you know, everybody's talking about.
But, yeah.
So championship teams are built over time. They take, that's why you hear sports teams going through things like rebuilds. So they have to find talent that exists in the minor leagues and, you know, up and coming talent, and nurture them and teach them and grow them until they're ready to make the big leagues. So, you know, that might be your nurses coming out of nursing school, right? If I'm hiring nurses, I'm trying to draft. I'm not trying to pick them up by trades or free agency. I'm trying to draft. I've got a database full of nurses that I've spoken to in the past. I've got nurses coming out of school, nurses coming over that want to be in this country versus whatever country they're in already. Those are the ones that I'm going after, because I can build a bigger roster faster and cheaper. It might not be I'm not going to win a championship game I'm not going to win the Stanley Cup the first year, but over time, you know, we'll get to that championship status. But nobody really wants to take that approach because it's longer, it's more drawn out, but it's more cost effective. You also can't build a championship team with just one of those strategies. You have to use all three.
Yeah.
So if you're not using all three, then, you know, you're just never going to hit that elite level status. You're just not going to do it.
Well, and on those same lines, if you want to be, there are obviously people out there that maybe work contracts where their contract comes to an end and they're legitimate impact players and they're in the same position as Shoei and they can, you know, go to market and interview with a handful of companies and say, this is what it's going to take to have me come in. But you know, the next realistic free market agent is going to be where there's somebody who's currently working and they have come to a natural, maybe they hit a glass ceiling, they don't see an opportunity further. And for you to get that person to want to come and shop you, if they are, say, in our Vancouver market, maybe we're not competing against, if it was, we don't recruit in tech, but if, you know, we're not recruiting or competing against Silicon Valley, and we're not competing against Tesla and SpaceX and all these organizations, it's who's available here in the local market. Then, like, how's your organization showing up? What is your externalization of who you are as an organization? What you're on a mission, what your vision is? Like, those things really become important at that level if somebody's currently employed, and even further, that they are proactively marketing themselves and they're reaching out to different people, they're building their network, they're well connected in their space, and they've got a really strong professional network. And maybe one day they go to that professional network and reach out to 10 people and they say, hey, look, I think I've got a 6-month window here. I've run my course, whatever it's going to be, I'm going to be looking to make a change. And those organizations have the opportunity to compete for that person. Taking that step back to the example I shared, where my client realized that, you know, if this person's at 150 and 150 is our max and we can't afford to pay them, there was nothing they could do to say from an organizational standpoint that we're this great organization, we've got a great vision, you can impact and do a lot of stuff here. Like, that was what his current company was. And so really the only thing they had to incentivize his change was, you know, the money, because he's going to be coming in as that impact player. Whereas, you know, the next step back for them was probably looking at somebody who is making between 100 and 120K so that they could offer that person, you know, the 120 to 140 and be under their 150K salary cap that they're fighting against. But then with that, then, you know, you've got potential, like, you know, training that you have to put into the person. Maybe they will or won't be the impact player they're looking for. You know, maybe to stick with hockey analogies, maybe it'll be someone like Brock Besser who struggles and you almost trade him out of the organization and then randomly has a breakout year. Who knows why? Like, there's risks associated. So yeah, you're going to save money, but there's, you know, you don't know as well if the person's proven, if it's going to work out. And then again, the steps back from that, or you go, okay, you know, and maybe this isn't reasonable and viable in this particular scenario, but they go, well, let's bring the person in at 40 or 50 or 60 or 80 or 100K and we'll, you know, run them through our farm team program and train and coach and mentor them. You know, in this situation, they really needed somebody to come in, and where they, you know, struggled to anchor themselves with was just purely on comp. And actually, of all things, after they went through the recruitment process, interviewed a bunch of people who were at the lower range, they realized what they needed to do was hire the higher end guy. And luckily, they were able to go back to him and ended up hiring him at the higher rate because they realized that that was truly what they needed through learning more in the recruitment process. But it, like, it just goes to show that, like, you know, there are a lot of different ways to solve the problem. And it comes down to, like, you know, what do you need today? And what, you know, how is that going to impact your organization? And what does the future look like for the two of you?
That's why I say you need all three. You can't do it with just one, right? Because, you know, if you need that impact player, you need that point per game guy, or 1.5 points per game. You know, if you compare that to, okay, well, I can save $20,000, but I'm going to get only 70% of the production that I would have out of this guy. And I'm going to have to put this much money in to try to get him up to 80% at best. You know, what's that cost on the organization versus the extra 20 grand it would have cost me to hire him? I remember a story. One of my old bosses told me that they had an employee that asked for a raise, and it would have put that employee above everybody else. And they were like, I don't know if I could afford to give them a raise. And so he said, well, what would happen if they left?
Yeah.
And the person was like, honestly, I'd probably have to hire two people to do what they do. And he was like, well, then pay her. Because, like, you can't afford to hire two people to do what she does, right? And if anybody else complains, then say, okay, well, this is the production we're getting. You want to hit that level of production, we'll pay you that salary, right? Like, you know, the third line guys are on the same team doing close to the same role as the top lines, you know, top three superstars, but they're not making anywhere near the same amount of money, and they know it, and they're okay with it because this is what my expectations are. And this is what the, you know, Crosby's expectations are. And you said something there sort of about, candidates and when they're ready and when they're not ready. And it kind of made me think of that whole active versus passive candidate BS that I hate so much. Like to me, there's no such thing as active versus passive candidates.
Right.
A candidate is a candidate. It's kind of like sales, right? They're either in market or they're not in market. And so if they're not in market, your job is to bring them in market.
Right.
And so anybody will make a change for the right reasons at the right time. There's not a person in the world who won't change jobs for the right reason at the right time. Doesn't happen. The problem is we don't often articulate the right reasons and we may miss the right time. And one of the biggest things to do is change. And so that's a difficulty that we often overlook in recruiting, is that it may not be that they don't like the opportunity. It may not be that they don't want to take the opportunity. It just may be that they're too afraid to make a change.
Oh, 100%.
Because people are afraid to make that change.
Well, you touched on something like super impactful just before that, which is the organization that had the person and, you know, couldn't in their head justify paying more. I literally did a market analysis with a client that was looking to hire, you know, plumbing foremen in Vancouver, which is exceptionally challenging to do. They want to hire 3-4. They've got so much business lined up that they could possibly take on. And they've got a bunch of apprentices and they can hire more, but they need more leadership to be able to hire. And so I had that same conversation about, okay, like if you want to hire these people who are currently employed at other organizations, you have to create an incentive to draw them to you. And in reality, in the space that you're in, you're not going to do it by saying you're a better organization with a better vision or better culture, any of these things. All going to be a relatively equal playing field. And so if you truly want to grow your organization, you're going to have to compensate these people to come and join your organization. And they said, well, what about like internal equity? Like we've already got some guys that have been with us for 5 or 10 years that are like at what we feel is a normal rate, but below the rate that you're portraying to us or that is being advertised in the market. And I said, that should be terrifying for you. Like, you know, you just like that,
100%.
Like, that should be like, you've got all these people and you're saying like, you can't hire people at this rate and that you have employees at that rate in your organization that are impact players for you. Like, you know, save yourself the $20,000 it's going to cost per hire coming through me and disperse that amongst those people. And like the biggest, and this is such a tough problem because I think holistically that the solution is that they have to understand the true value of their service and charge more to their clients to be able to justify it. Because at the end of the day, again, the company has to be profitable. You can't bring these people in and then do it at a loss. Like it'll never happen. But if that's what you need to do to grow, then in order to hire those people to grow and to be able to deliver more to your clients, you're going to have to charge more. That might be difficult. That might not
get more business.
Right. Right. Like sell more. Like, obviously you solve one problem, you create another, but again, and the funny thing was before I even went into this meeting, we don't really recruit in that space. And so I said, look, you know, I'm going to give you some info, but there's no like magic express bullet at the end of this where I'm going to say like, and this is why you should do all your recruiting through me. I was like, there's no solution for me at the end of this. I'm purely just going to try to give you some insights and guidance and give you my 2 cents. And again, at the end of it, it was like, it sounds like you do need to hire to bring these people in to grow your organization. But again, part of the struggle is you've got yourself anchored of what is like a realistic compensation for yourself. And again, like you are potentially opening yourself to risk of an organization coming to your people and saying, you know, and it just ties so perfectly to your active versus passive. You know, they aren't active in the market. They're happy in their organization and role until someone comes to them and says, hey, like I'm working with an organization or we're an organization that's looking to grow and like we're willing to compensate you to make a change. And like, yeah, that's scary. The grass isn't always greener. Like maybe it isn't the right role, but they're like, I would wager everybody's got a number, right?
Everybody's willing to have that conversation, right? And there's very, very few, very, very few organizations who will say, okay, you know, I'm currently, so I'm paying all of my developers $80,000 a year. And if you have developers for $80,000 a year, pay them more because you're, yeah. And so, I go out to hire and I realize that the market is paying $100,000 or $120,000 a year. And then I get afraid to hire at that rate. But really, if that's the rate, I've only heard one story where somebody said their boss came to them and said, "Hey, congratulations, you just got a raise today." And they're like, okay, why? Well, because we just hired this person and this is what we had to pay to hire them. And if that's the current rate, then that's what you're worth too.
Yeah.
And so, an organization who does that is going to keep employees.
Yeah, 100%.
Versus, the cost of losing them because somebody came along and paid them. It's crazy. Like if you look at the stats, the average pay raise is 2%, but the average pay increase and changing from one organization to another is 15 to 20.
That's super interesting. We're going to clip that because that's a phenomenal question to hear from any organization out there of, have you ever had that realization that you've had to pay above where you had originally been anchored to bring someone in, and as a result actually went to current employees that deliver to the same effect and increase their compensation to combat, the market. I think I'd be blown away to hear how many people can put their hand up and say that either happened to me or yes, we've done that.
Yep. But how many people have ended up losing employees because
they didn't.
Employees realize that that's what the market rate is now.
Yeah.
Right. And there's they say, your salary is confidential. Don't share your salary with other employees. So that's just bullshit. Everybody talks.
The greatest advancement in recruitment technology is here. If you haven't seen Shazam yet, do yourself a favor. Their cutting-edge recruitment website tech is making clients across the globe more successful online. Shazam has taken the recruitment industry by storm due to the opportunities it creates and the problems it solves. If you do anything this week for your business, make sure it's booking a time to check out Shazam.
Yeah, sweet. So going back to the sports team analogy, you talked about building the farm team and that being a less expensive way to hire, a great way to bring talent in. And sometimes there can be massive impact individuals that come through those drafts. We talked about high volume recruiting and that being an area that you specialized in. Can you touch on how that kind of ties into that kind of framework of those three approaches to building a championship team?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, when you're doing high volume recruiting, it's not like, if I'm hiring a first line center, I'm going to hire a first line center and expect to have him for the next 10 years, hopefully. Right. And so I may end up hiring a second line or a third line center down the road. But if I'm doing high volume recruiting and I'm hiring the same profile, the same person multiple times a year or a bunch at once, what we end up seeing is, I might get 100 candidates, screen it down to say 20 that I like, 10 that I interview, first interview, 5 that go to the hiring manager, 1 that gets hired because I have 1 opening today, but I'll have that same opening again in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a month or 2 months. And so what happens in recruitment is what comes up, when that position opens up again in 2 weeks or a month or 2 months, 3 months down the road, what do? We start all over again.
Yeah.
We go back to the drawing board. We post the job. We spend all of that expense that we've already spent to get new candidates. And half of them that apply are already in our database. And so, when we talk about drafting and nurturing and building that talent and letting them play in the farm teams kind of thing until they're ready, if I'm doing a lot of recruiting, I'm hiring nurses, I'm hiring whatever, there's a lot of people that I talk to in that process that are either just not ready or, they were really good, but this person was a little bit better. So that scenario that you talked about, they interviewed all of these other people and they liked them, but they realized that they're only going to get 80% of the production that they're going to get from this rock star that's really going to fit their needs. So they went with that person first, right? But the next time they need to fill that role, are they going to go back to any of those candidates that they talked to that they liked? Likely not. And you know, so I didn't hire a guy today because I wanted 5 years of experience. He's really only got two. But in 2 years from now or 3 years from now, I'm hiring that position again. Guess what? That guy now has 5 years experience. Do I go back to that guy? Probably not. And so, you know, what we do with Candidate Hub is we help take those candidates that were, you know, we call them civil medalists, right? They were just right there. They were almost perfect, but they weren't quite perfect. I mean, nobody's perfect, but you know, they just, there was something missing, or there was just somebody that was just a little bit better. And so if you're doing a lot of high volume recruiting where you're recruiting over and over and over and over again for the same types of roles, you need to be taking those candidates that you've been talking to throughout the process and keep them engaged, keep them nurtured, keep them interested in your team, right? You know, we're on a championship run, and there's going to be a time where we're going to need you to come into the lineup, and it's not today, you know, but keep fighting for your spot.
Well, I think there's like three flags here to plant that I think are really important. And I don't know what maybe the best order is to talk about it, but one, like, I think the process of high volume recruiting is one that if you become really strong at it, that it lends itself to the strategic hiring. And I think organizations that hire infrequently have a much harder time hiring than organizations that have high volume recruiting in one end of their business while also hiring professional people in other areas, because you get a better understanding of what's like realistic to ask of a candidate in the process. And then the second flag, and I want you to maybe dig in a bit to like the approach to high volume recruiting versus maybe like another avenue. But I think you touch on something that's so impactful, which is like the candidate experience, and how just because someone's not a fit today doesn't mean they won't be a fit tomorrow, or doesn't mean they won't be a fit a year or 2 years from now. And how you treat them in the process like results in your ability to consider that talent like later on. And then I think third is like how like Candidate Hub ties into that, because I think you specifically work to try to solve that problem, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when you're doing high volume recruiting, the problem is you're going to eventually run out of people to talk to.
Yeah.
Because there's, and people talk about talent shortage, and I don't think there's a talent shortage. I think that's a huge misnomer. Talent is out there. It's just that we just don't know how to find it and be creative and think outside the box sometimes. So, you know, that, and there's a stat, and I can't remember what it is, but I think it's something like 76% of candidates who have a negative experience would never consider going back to that organization.
Yeah.
So, but it's like astronomically high like that. And so, you know, if you're bringing people through the process, and it's easy to say, well, you know, I don't have time to get back to every candidate. I don't have time to do this, and I don't have time to do that. But, you know, if you don't stay in touch with them, if you don't give them a positive experience when you need them down the road, they're not going to want to come to you. And they're not going to want to refer friends to you, and they're not going to, you know, so you're really burning a bridge. And it's, you know, we often think recruiters are like one and done with a candidate, but if we don't do it right, the candidate's one and done with us. And so we really need to provide that. And so Candidate Hub really focuses on that engagement piece, you know, we do it by analyzing data and behavior. And it's funny, we actually just launched a YouTube channel called At Candidate Engagement. Where we're going to be doing a lot of talk about some of the, you know, trials and tribulations of engaging with candidates and providing positive experiences and stuff, and talking to people who are, you know, doing it in the industry, and what it means to them, and some candidates and what it means to them to have a positive experience. And so, you know, by analyzing every engagement, every touch point that a candidate has with your business, and then offering up tailored, personalized, triggered content to that candidate is going to provide a much better experience than, you know, if I just do a 3-email drip sequence through MailChimp kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or if I, you know, call a bunch of candidates and I post a job and then I never talk to them again. And, you know, so providing that holistic experience and really tailoring the experience and the journey to them, it's like e-commerce, right? When we talk about e-commerce and selling in e-commerce, Amazon tells you what to buy and when to buy it because they know all of the stuff that you've looked at. They know everything you've shown interest in. And so, you know, Amazon is always trying to bring you back to buy that next thing you need from them,
yeah,
not somewhere else, right? And so we need to be doing that in recruitment. We need to be nurturing those candidates so that the next time they need to buy a new job, they come and buy it from us, not somebody else.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm interested in your thought because we do high volume recruiting and then we also have a specialized search division. And I find when we do the high volume that we're often managing our clients' expectations in saying, like, if you want to hire a large contingent of people, we need to boil it down to the true, like, underlying core, which is, unless there is a particular like skill set that's required, no, you do high volume, but in some like maybe more technical spaces. But when it comes to like pure, like just volume and skill and experience don't matter. It comes down to aptitude and motivation and understanding like who can come in and deliver in this situation. And I find when we start getting into the more specialized searches, they get less focused on finding someone who could and trying to find somebody who has, and it becomes so much more expensive and so much more difficult to figure out like where, you know, the spot is on the dartboard that we're trying to hit. And just wonder if like that's something you've kind of encountered, is not necessarily that it's easier to do one or the other, but just that you almost have to like shift the mindset of what's realistic or viable. Because again, like, I would wager for any position, volume is going to be challenging. And if you're going to go volume, then you need to forego some expectations and just go like, what's the minimum, you know, reasonable expectation or requirement that we can agree to that's going to open the door.
Well, and that leads right into what I said about a talent shortage, right? We don't have a talent shortage.
Yeah.
There's tons of talented people and a bunch of them are looking for jobs.
Yeah.
The problem is that we're constantly trying to fit a square peg into a square hole and we're not willing to change the shape of the hole.
Right.
And so, you know, for example, like Kellogg's or one of those places that wanted to figure out how to change over their, like, to go from Fruit Loops to Corn Flakes or whatever when they were making cereal. Every time they shut down and switched from one brand to another, it cost them so much money.
Sure.
And so in order to figure that out, they sent a bunch of executives to the Daytona 500. They said, we're not sending you there to see who wins the race. We're sending you there to study pit crews because pit crews can change over an entire vehicle in 17 seconds. How do they do it? Right. And so they looked outside of their industry for the answer. And we don't do that enough in recruitment. If I'm hiring, call centers is a perfect example, right? Call centers is one of the, you know, high volume where I need to fill a class of 50 people next week, right? And so, you know, if I was trying to hire a bunch of people for a call center, I'd be looking at what skills are important to make that successful. And what other industries have those skills? What industries have those skills that might be lacking, right? You know, what is important to the people that we have coming in that we can sell to, right? So again, it kind of goes back to that. If I'm doing a high volume recruiting and I'm trying to hire a large number of people, like this, that's e-commerce 101, right? I need to attract a bunch of people and then figure out a reason for them to want to convert to buy from me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I was McDonald's, for example, I'm competing against Burger King and, you know, A&W and all of these other fast food restaurants trying to hire frontline staff. And I'm trying to hire a lot of frontline staff over the years. One of the things about McDonald's is they do such an amazing job training people.
Yeah.
That I know when I was recruiting, I would interview anybody that had McDonald's on their resume just because they had worked at McDonald's, right? So I'd be doing lots of things around how McDonald's is a great stepping point to future careers, right? And so there's so many transferable skills within different industries that if we figure out what I need, where I can get it and what's in it for that person if they come here versus go there, right? So, you know, McDonald's, if you come here, look at the people that are, look at our graduates, right? Our graduates have gone on to lead Fortune 500 companies or have done this or have done that. And so if you think outside the box, tell the right story about why this makes sense for somebody in your position with your skill set and your aspirations, then your job becomes a lot easier because you're finding a pain and you're solving it for that candidate versus just trying to, like, too often we view high volume recruiting just becomes transactional. It's just bums and seats.
I just, as you were talking, had this kind of like epiphany moment in my head of how, as employers, we make it harder for ourselves. And it's like the unknown competition for the job seeker that you're fighting against. And I think, you know, Indeed, for one, is, at least in our market, is probably like the number one job board that people apply to, that I would say the most companies in Vancouver would post job to. And you can upload your resume, but Indeed has also built a system where they have a kind of like framework that you can put your application into, and it'll try to build a standardized process. And it almost makes me think, like, I know companies have application processes, but where you also upload a resume, and then it's like, well, why am I doing twice as much work? And I feel like, especially in high volume, if organizations made it easier on themselves and just said, here's our application process, and if you can get an 80% score on whatever the score is by somebody submitting their application, was there grammar errors? Did they check all the boxes? Did they answer all the questions? And this is a hireable person. Like, it might make it easier on themselves. But what I find happens is, like, the goalpost keeps moving because they get 100 applicants. They see the best one and they go, this applicant did this. Okay, great. We want to hire this person. And now we want to hire like 10 or 20 or 30, 40, 50 more of this person. And it's like, but that's like the 1%. And really what you're looking for is, say, the top 20 of people available, but we like unrealistically anchor ourselves. And then on the candidate side, I kind of touched on it, but it was probably one of the most impactful things that someone said. And I think as an organization, we're just looking for like informed job seekers. And if it's a frontline position, I mean, I shared a post the other week, we had 1300 applicants and we had 200, a combination. So it was 160 phone calls into our company and 60 walk-ins. And out of the 60 phone calls, only 9 people had a specific position they were calling about. We had one person who didn't even know the name of the company they were calling or who we were. They were just given a phone number from a friend. And for the most part, people would call in and be like, hey, you guys help people hire for jobs and I want one. So like, I'm at your disposal, job me. And it's like, well, that's not how it works. Like, you know,
but why not?
Yeah, but because like what they're demonstrating is that they haven't done, like they haven't even gone on our website. All of our positions are listed there. It's not, maybe that it doesn't work that way, but the people who called in and said, hey, I see your express. I see that you've got this position listed and I'm interested in it. It takes 30 to 60 seconds more effort, but it is a demonstration of a behavior that, like, you're not just looking for something for this minute or whatever. You actually went and purposefully sought something. And I think it's just a behavioral demonstration going back to the problems that arise when a company hires somebody and it doesn't work out. It's massively costly. It takes anywhere from,
for sure,
6 months, maybe a year for a company to like get the recoup back on the investment. And so if they hire 20 people and 10 of them don't show up, you know, it's just a big waste of time and effort. And a lot of people apply to our jobs that are full-time permanent jobs that say they're full-time permanent and they're students. They can only work in the, like, there's just a lot of stuff where people haven't taken the 2 to 3 minutes to get informed on what they want, like what they truly want to do. I mean, I've had phone calls for people that call in and say, I'm looking for a job. I'm willing to do anything. And we go, great. Like the easiest, lowest barrier to entry is construction. Oh, I don't want to work outside or do heavy lifting. It's like, but you just said you're willing to do anything. And the very first question I asked you was counter to that. Clearly that's not the case. Why don't you actually tell me what you want? You know, and I think again, it doesn't mean you have to be this highly educated, highly knowledgeable, highly skilled person. I just feel like, and again, if you got a counter to this, I'm all ears.
I'm teeing them up.
Yeah. It just feels like that's one of the greatest challenges. And again, for us, our clients put prerequisite requirements on us and we manage their expectations based on what's realistic in the market. And we fill with a high degree of accuracy the jobs that we're here to solve the problems for our clients. There's a lot of people that come to us that like are probably great people. It's not what we get compensated to do. And it's not something we have the time to do to coach all of them through how to show up better. And so effectively they either get screened out or screen themselves out by not taking that extra second to like know why they're reaching out, why they're calling us, what they're actually looking to apply for. Yeah. I'm interested in your counters.
This podcast is going to be extra long now. I think you're not wrong in that it costs money, a lot of money, to make the wrong choice. And so because of that, historically, we have made it more difficult to apply for jobs than less difficult. And you look at sort of the ATS movement where it was like upload your resume and then go in and fill everything out and register for jobs and all of this shit that we put as friction points for candidates. And we've gotten really, really good in recruitment at coming up with excuses for disqualifying people. Mm. Like we just want to disqualify people, right? But if I was a marketing agency,
that's easy. That's the easy part.
That's the easy part.
Yeah.
Right? I can just check him off.
9 seconds. I looked at your resume. It's not a fit. Now I don't have to call you and go through the rigmarole.
Right? So easy. Okay. Now let's flip this. I'm a marketing agency. And I call you as a staffing firm and I say, or you come to me, right? You come to me. I'm a staffing agency and I want to do some marketing to get more clients. Okay, great. So what type of clients are you looking for? We work with construction companies. Okay, great. So all construction companies? No, we really focus more on landscaping companies. Okay, so I can go through a ton of questions where you're not going to know the answers or you're going to say one thing and then mean something else, or you didn't do homework on what type of marketing that we offer, right? Does that mean that you're not potentially a client?
Could be,
but is it automatically mean that, you know what, I'm wasting my time. You're never going to be a client of mine.
Suppose it depends. If you're the marketing agency, if you have an ideal client, and the ideal client is someone who's like informed and educated and knows what they want. Cause yeah, I mean, marketing's a monster and like right. For them to have to shift my narrative and get me, I mean, like I get where you're going, but I would say like, there's some agencies that would go, yeah, come on in. Like we can walk you through the process. It's our job to hold your hand. And there'd maybe two parts to that. One would be like, we'll do a free pre-boarding and assess whether there's a fit. And the other would be, you've got a lot of work to do and we're going to charge you for it. And here's what the cost is going to be. And I think maybe that's where some of that disconnect lies and why there's people out there that offer all these different like resume services and job coaching services and all these things. Cause there are people that need help. And like, I guess the question is, whose job is it? Is it the job seekers? Is it the education system? Is it the government? Or like, is it your job as a job seeker to go, I need help and I'm going to go pay someone to get it. And then you pay $1,000 for some resume that you or I or another talent acquisition person would like pick apart. Like it's tough. Like I don't know if there's an answer.
Yeah. See, I think what you just said there for, you know, a talent acquisition person to pick apart, right? That's what we pride ourselves on.
Yeah.
We pride ourselves on being able to pick apart and identify a candidate that isn't going to fit as opposed to thinking outside the box, right? You know what I mean? Okay. So I'm hiring construction workers. You know what? You just applied for my construction job, but you have no construction experience. You're a chef. Why would I want to hire you? Well, because I work ridiculously long hours. I put up with crap. I think on my feet to be able to change recipes, make a dish, solve a problem. You know, there's a ton of skills that a chef would use that would make great construction worker.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't think that way when we're recruiting. We don't look at it and go, this person's overqualified. That is the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard in my life. Like, okay, so maybe I'm in a position in my life where I've been working like a dog for my entire life, and I don't want to do that anymore. I've had the $150,000 salary. My kids are gone. I don't have very many expenses. I just want a $70,000 a year job where I can do it without thinking and enjoy, you know, my coast my way to retirement. Right. But we look at this experience and go, that person would never want to work. They won't stay here because they'll be bored. But we don't know what that person wants. And that person may not know what they want, right? So, you know, the person that calls and says, I'll do anything, that to me is a telltale sign that they're desperate. They're looking for work. Okay, so this is our low-lying fruit. Nope, not interested in that. So instead of thinking, okay, well, you know, they didn't put the effort in. Well, but what are they interested in? Okay, so what do you like? What are you looking for? You know, these are questions salespeople would ask to try to dig and peel the onion.
Yeah.
But in recruitment, we don't peel the onion. We just look at the outside. The outside looks bad. The whole onion's bad.
But I'd wager for like both of those scenarios that if I go back to my new favorite thing, which is the informed job seeker, I mean, you answered the question as the guy from the restaurant where it was like, why do you want to make this change? And you had answers outside of, you know, what I find we get a ton of, which is just like, you know, I'm just not happy. And it's like, okay, but like, what's going to change in this job? Are you just not happy because you have to work and that you're going to, I'm in a place with my client, and then 3 weeks later, you're going to say you're not happy there and leave. And then, you know, if I do that too many times with my client, they're not going to pay me anymore. To the guy who's got too much experience, you know, if that's a factor that you aren't aware of, that you are applying for a job that's maybe lower, but I think it's 100% a real thing of, you know, I'm not looking to like do this crazy stuff anymore. I think I can provide a lot of value in another area. You probably need to be informed as a job seeker, know the factors that you're up against and articulate those in some way to an employer saying, hey, look, you're going to look at my resume and you're going to say, there's no way this guy should be applying for this job. And yet here's why I'm applying for it. And this is why it would be a great fit for both of us and why you'd get a lot of value. And like, I get it. Like, you know, it'd be nice if we just took flyers on everybody, but you know, as an agency where companies pay us to produce like the result they're looking for, we can't take those risks of just, you know, hoping it's going to work. I don't know if that's something maybe you guys do in your high volume recruiting that you take a lot of people, and I don't know if you'd call it lucky or it's just that there are all really great people out there, and they just, and again, it could be the process. The process, I get it, is brutal, but the reason that process exists is because like companies have been burned. And like, I shared one the other day. I had a client of mine hired somebody in the first month. His mother passed away and he required a number of days off. This is a large firm in Vancouver. They paid for his bereavement leave and gave him his 5 paid sick days in his first 30 days of employment, which he wouldn't have been entitled to, but they did it anyways because they wanted to show up for their employees. Everything was good after the first 30 days. First 60 days are fine. In the 60 to 90 day mark, he shares that his wife is to give birth, gives birth in a couple days, sends a picture of the newborn baby saying everybody's happy and healthy to the team. They're looking at the picture. They're going, oh, this is great. And somebody just zooms in on the little wristband on the new baby. And it says it's from 2017. And this was a $100,000 plus professional employee. And they go, well, that's really weird, and send a message and go, hey, like, this is unusual. It's from 2017. It's 2024. Like, how is this a thing? Ask them for a picture, ends up, the employee quits the next day. They start doing some digging. Employee's mother never passed away. It was all, who knows what craziness was going on. There's no way they could have solved this problem through recruiting. There's no way these red flags could have been found. This organization, it cost them upwards of $50,000 to make that mistake. And I guarantee you, for the next month, 3 months, 6 months, they're going to have a magnifying glass on employees regardless. And it'll be an unreasonable one. It's not going to be like
100%.
It's not going to be fair. That is one client with one crazy story. And I bet you and I could call every company we've ever worked with,
every client,
and say, give me your one crazy story, and they will all blow our minds. And that's what people are up against. And it's not fair. It makes it really hard for job seekers. But I think as such, which is why we do what we do, like, you have to know what's going on that other side. And if you just show up and say, like, I want a job because I'm willing to work, like, it might not be enough. And yeah, that sucks. And maybe that's not fair. Maybe employers should just give people a chance. But there's so much risk associated with making a bad hire, having somebody sue you, or, you know, having somebody get injured because they weren't in the right position, or because they weren't. There's so many things. There's so many things that can go wrong. And, like, I guess I bet you employers feel like it is less frequent that it goes right.
And I'm not saying that there's no reason why we've put these barriers in. I'm just saying it's time to start thinking about whether some of these barriers make sense.
Yeah.
Right.
And, I agree.
And so, yeah, I can't have an in-depth conversation with every candidate that applies. I can't. But if somebody takes the time to call me, I'm going to have an in-depth conversation with them. And so if they say, you know, I'm just not happy. Well, what's why? Well, you know, we need to be creative in the way we have these conversations. So here's a gift for you. I'm going to give you this one. And this is where we'll wrap it up.
Sure.
But, so I would ask them this question. If you could wave a magic wand, no consequences, sky's the limit. You could wave a magic wand and change one thing about your current employment situation.
Mm.
What would it be? And they'll have an answer to that every time.
Do you find there's a more common answer that you get, or is it different with everybody?
I use it a lot in, like, that's a question from, okay, I'm going to give you another one too. I'll give you two. So that's a question that I would get, or I use when I'm, like, doing problem solving, like when I'm trying to, talk to potential customers about, you know, when I was going through building Candidate Hub, I asked that question to recruiters. Mm. If you could mean wave a magic wand and change one thing about the recruitment process, what would it be?
Right.
The question that I asked every candidate when I was in the agency world, and this is, I stole it, so I'm giving it to the world to steal from me, was, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rate your current job in terms of satisfaction?
Right.
On a scale of 1 to 10. No one ever says 10.
Right.
I don't care if they say 1. I don't care if they say 9. No one ever says 10. The purpose of that question is to lead to the second question, which is, what keeps it from being a 10?
Right.
That's where you'll find out where they're unhappy.
Yeah.
Because they'll say, oh, well, you know, I don't have enough sick days. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't have this. I don't have that. Right. That's where you'll find out. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you in your current position? What's keeping it from being a 10? Those are the two questions that I asked every candidate that I talked to when I was doing recruitment in the agency world. My gift to you. That will help you uncover some stuff. All right. Well, we could go on for another 2 or 3 hours, I'm sure.
There'll be a future episode in our future.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to have a reconvene for future conversation. But, listen, Brent, I really appreciate getting together with you today and talking through some of this stuff.
That was great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh.